There's this common belief that if you feed your kid, put a roof over their head, and keep them out of jail, you've done your job. And sure, maybe that worked in 1973. But today, it's not even close. In this segment with psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, we dig into something most people don't want to talk about. What happens when a kid grows up never really being seen? Not neglected in the traditional sense, fed, clothed, scheduled, but emotionally invisible. No reflection, no mirroring, no recognition of who they are outside of their utility to the family. That disconnect, when a parent treats their kid like a side character of their own life story, that's where a lot of identity confusion starts. And when that kid doesn't get seen at home, doesn't get seen at school, maybe doesn't even feel seen by their peers, where do they go? The internet. And not the healthy corner with recipe blogs and cat videos. No, the other corner, the dark one, the one that hands them a script that says, you're not the problem, the world is. And here's who you should blame. We're also talking about a culture that throws porn at kids before they even hit puberty, and then acts shocked when they grow up angry, confused, and emotionally broken. We don't talk about sex. We don't talk about connection. We definitely don't talk about empathy. So what fills that gap for those kids? Fantasy? Violence? Rage masquerading as empowerment? And look, this isn't about moral panic. It's about asking real questions. Are we mirroring our kids or just managing them? Are we teaching them anything about healthy relationships or letting the algorithm do the talking? Siobhan breaks this down in a way that's both clinical and deeply human. Because when a kid doesn't know who they are and nobody's helping them figure it out, that identity will get filled in by someone or something else. And that's where this really starts to unravel.
And I think the thing that kids really need, they need mirroring. That means, you know, being able to reflect back what you see in them in so many ways. You recognize their presence, you recognize their emotional state, you recognize their interests, their weaknesses, the places that they're struggling, the places that they're shining. I talked with a mom recently who was somewhat narcissistic, and she was really disappointed that her kid wasn't interested in sports because she's so into sports and she's a big tennis player and, you know, all about her interests. And she wanted her kids to share that. And she has a kid that doesn't, and he's into music and he's won a scholarship to a good school based upon his musical ability. And she's kind of disappointed in that.
Yeah.
And so we had to do some reality checking on your kid is not you. And you have to enjoy and appreciate the qualities that make your kid unique. So, yeah,
that
narcissistic
seems to,
parents.
I want to say that seems to be a common, I guess I would say, complaint that you'd hear amongst young people who are feeling isolated, who are feeling alone out there, is a situation very much like that. I don't relate to my family. I'm not like them. But you have that family member who views the kid and narcissist more of as an extension of themselves than actually an individual. And then that creates a lot of trouble defining their own identity or figuring out who they are as people, because they're not getting that mirroring back, or they're just not even getting the least amount of encouragement. They're just, oh, yeah, you're the black sheep, or whether it's said directly or not, they know it. And they know it's a chore sometimes for the parents to show some interest or spend some time. That seems to be a big thing. And the kids walk away going, well, you know, my family's not... That's if they're not getting it at school, if they're not getting, they don't have a good friend group, they could at least get it at home. And I feel like that's a place that is being they're lacking it so much, even with well-intentioned parents. I don't know why, but it feels like there's something missing in a lot of parents, the parenting gene, if you will, that knows how to get there and be in front of this with their kids. But again, yeah. You look back a few generations, we had a society where, you know, kids, you know, be seen, not heard. And that's sort of an outlook that's not that far back. Is it just now that we are starting to learn how to be psychologically and mentally present in a healthy way for our children? And this is why this is all such seemingly new territory for parents in general?
I think we're doing a lot better with it. Now, does that trickle down to everybody? You know, because you have to be interested in, I want to be the best parent I can be, and in a healthy way. And that doesn't mean molding my child to be in my own image, which is what you're talking about. But we sure have more, certainly, accessible information on how to attune to your kids and how to mirror your kids and what that looks like and how to recognize that your kid is going to have a different path. I write on those subjects all the time and speak about it, and as you do. And I think that the information is there for people who want to learn how to support their kids.
And that's the biggest thing, people who want it. Not just, I'll do that. I'll get around to it. Suddenly they're 18 or suddenly they're 15 and shot somebody up and they're in jail. It's not a let's get around to it sometime. Your clock is ticking as they're young. Walk me through what happens here psychologically, for example, like when a young man logs into one of these forums, you know, and finds a community sitting there validating their most dangerous thoughts, their you know, angers, their frustrations with, you know, life, you know, with the world, that you're, women are not just going to bow down to you and think you're just the best thing on earth because you think you're a nice guy. What happens in these forums? And I mean, how you think of radicalization and stuff, forever we talked about that with like Middle Eastern countries and radicalization of terrorism. But I mean, this is another version of it. How does it go from, you know, I feel awkward around girls to I hate women and they should all die?
A lot of complaining, a lot of storytelling. They reinforce each other. They go into rage. They get that, you know, rage addiction. It's like it makes them feel better to be angry. And so it builds. And people who may have just come in with a sense of curiosity, it's like they catch that emotional tone and it changes their perceptions. And then they start with these revenge fantasies. And one of the images that we're looking at today is Elliot Rodgers, and they create heroes and share stories about how many people were killed. And they even, you know, start to look at it as a game. Could I engage in something like this and get a higher kill score than he did? Which is really scary that we're gamifying murder. But it can get really extreme. And of course, the majority of them don't ever act out on it in any way other than they become really miserable people. Mm-hmm. But there are these few that have committed these atrocious crimes. And then they model after each other. I do think I have fairly well settled, I bet money on it, that the Papa Rogers character that showed up on social media during the initial phases of the investigation into the Idaho killings, I do think that was Koberger, because we know he was fascinated with Bundy. It would make sense that Rogers was on his radar, and I, you know, we were speculating before. I'm fairly convinced of it now.
How could it not be at this? I mean, the character, and I don't have it readily available, but if you just look it up, Papa Rogers, online, and Brian Koberger, the profile looked exactly like Brian Koberger. I mean, and this is before anyone knew who Brian Koberger even was. I don't see in any way, shape, or form how it could be anyone else other than Brian Koberger at this point. The resemblance is stunning. And the information this person had, unless he told somebody else about this, some other incel that was messing with people, it had to have been him or someone who knew it was him. It's one of those two. I can't see it being any other way. There's there's all sorts of terminology and stuff that gets thrown around as there is in any sort of group. Black pill is one with the incels. The black pill ideology basically tells them that they are doomed by genetics and society. It's not a take the black pill and this will get better. It's take the black pill and forever live in sorrow and agony and never find a solution to your problems. That's an interesting way. I mean, is this new in society in terms of large groups of people just digging into something that literally has no solution and just wallowing in their pain and their sorrow and never trying to find a way out? It seems in almost any group historically, its goal is to get better, is to find a solution. This is, let's die in our sorrow.
Yeah, it's horrendously toxic, and I do think it's new. I certainly can't think of anything in history that was like that. You may have found a couple of people who found each other and reinforced that dark view, but to have this be a subculture, a fairly popular subculture that builds and amplifies over time. Yeah, I think this is another special gift from the internet here.
All the special gifts that we get from the internet, they just keep coming. And yes, I want to go back to like 93 for a day or life and be good when the internet was just very, very small. You said earlier, you know, very few act out on it. And I know when we're referring to that, or you were referring to that, we're talking about like killing, like getting out there, murdering people. Yes, that is a smaller number, but and I don't know that we have the number to that, but I would argue there is a massive number that is getting out there and acting out on it, not necessarily to the murderous level, but to the let's be an extremely dysfunctional human being. Let's ruin lives. Let's ruin relationships. And sometimes don't even realize they're doing it because they see no reason to try and improve themselves. They just get themselves out there and interact in people's lives. And people are none the wiser until these people have caused so much chaos in the world. I would guess there's a lot of them out there that are simply doing that. And the damage factor from that group has got to be insanely higher than the murderous group. But the damage, the trauma, the psychological, all that stuff that comes along with it, that's got to be a huge number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the misogyny. Yes. I think we've still got terrible problems with people who treat women abusively. Mm-hmm. And even though these guys may or may not ever find a real woman to be involved with, my guess is when they move through the world, these are not nice people to women.
Yeah.
And it leaks out.
And it feels like it's a different type of misogyny than we've had in the past. I mean, in the past, it's felt... I don't know. I'm not trying to, and I'm not, you know, endorsing it, but it seemed it was based more on what you would call like traditional values of, okay, the wife is at home, the man works, and that sort of misogyny where it's class, it's roles, it's things of that. This is hate. You know, in misogyny in the past, you know, if you had a man that was working and the wife was the homemaker, I mean, in a healthy relationship, typically the man came home and he didn't hate the wife. There's plenty where there was, you know, beating and all that. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about a society that was very different in the way they looked at things, but it wasn't, we're in these roles because I think you should die because you have breasts and a vagina. Today there's that, and that's what makes it a very different type of misogyny. Would you agree?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and I think it leaks out the kind of porn that's being produced now that these guys consume. I always say I think I've seen everything, and then I'll see something else that completely shocks me. You know, the idea now that we have porn not only centered on rape, but centered on, you know, dismembering people with those kind of fantasies, snuff kinds of porn out there.
There's dismember porn?
Well, and they don't actually do it, but yeah. it's the fantasy. Oh, and yeah.
Yeah, that's not breeding serial killers or anything.
Yeah, yeah. And the choking, you know, this is coming up in younger people, women who come to therapy. Well, the new guy she was dating was into trying to choke her and coming to therapy about it because is this normal and I'm not okay with it. And it's like, this is stuff that I didn't used to hear about. Yeah. And so it's again, this anger, this rage, this desire to hurt or kill or maim women. It's really alarming.
Is another problem that we have in our country the fact that sex is so faux pas and that we don't talk about it much, yet it's infiltrated in everything that we have. We have access to anything anyone wants to watch in any way, shape, or form. And now with AI, you can just make it up, and then it shows up for you. And we don't discuss it. So it gets out there. It invades a young person's mind in a very different way than it ever used to. It used to be young people, oh, you found your dad's Playboy or something. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, let's watch a gangbang, I guess, involving, you know, dismemberment or whatever the fuck people are coming up with.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, then people don't talk about it. It just festers. It lives in someone's mind. And then people find, oh, I'm into this weird shit. Mm-hmm. But they don't talk about it either. Is that an issue? Is that a uniquely American problem where other countries... You go to the UK, there'll be full-blown nudity and sexual, you know, conversations are much easier to have with that culture versus the US culture, where things are more sexualized, but we don't talk about it at all. If there was a healthier conversation going on, I'm wondering if that would help.
I think we have to acknowledge reality that this stuff is out there, that kids are accessing it. And how do we model for kids that sex, I'm a bit conservative, right? Mm-hmm. Put it off to my age or whatever. But I think sex should be about human connection, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
And that's when it's healthy and positive and people aren't being hurt because it's based upon empathy and compassion for the other person. And I would like to see people having those conversations about, you know, sex should be about personal growth and love and safety and everybody's making each other feel good. And it's a pleasant, positive thing when you're developmentally ready for it. And how to model that for kids and show kids that in our relationships. Another thing that I've heard repeatedly is dad is home alone with the kids or up late at night by himself. And dad is on weird porn sites. Mm. And the kids walk in the room and see this. And then they go and tell mom. And then there's uproar in the home about, you know, again, it gets back to what are parents thinking? They're not a lot of times.
If you're a parent, that conversation probably stirred something uncomfortable. And if it didn't, it should. Because here's the reality. A lot of kids are growing up in homes where they're technically cared for, but emotionally malnourished. Well, this is how I was brought up too. Yeah, maybe you could do better. That used to be the goal. That's how my parents raised me and I turned. Did you really turn out okay? Did you? If you're really asking yourself and really looking at yourself, did you? If you're not good, the kids aren't going to be good. They're being told who to be instead of asked who they are online. Their personalities are getting molded around their parents' unmet dreams or their parents' unresolved baggage. And when that doesn't fit, they retreat quietly into their rooms, into their phones, into whatever community will give them the one thing they weren't getting at home. Attention. I give them attention. Does it matter? Are you giving them attention that matters? Or are you giving them junk food attention? Just attention that's fleeting. What's your day? How you doing? Okay, I'm going to go watch TV. Do you know who your kids are? Well, it's hard. They don't talk. Do you talk to them? Do you give that opportunity a chance? Do you have the patience? Or do you demand it now in your time at your place? Because that's how you had to do it with your parents. And damn it, your kids are going to do it the same way too. Did it work for you? If not, and you're doing the same damn thing, maybe it's time to try something different. Or you can just keep repeating the same path and let the internet fill in. The problem is the internet doesn't care if your kid's emotionally fragile. It just knows how to hold their gaze. It doesn't feed them rage, resentment, violent pornography. It feed them all of those things. And groups that celebrate victimhood as the permanent identity. And it'll do it long before you even notice anything is wrong. We also touched on something else that people don't want to hear. What porn culture is doing to emotional development. When you've got teenage boys watching dismemberment fantasies and thinking choking during sex is just normal now, something is broken. And when girls are sitting in therapy asking if they're wrong for being uncomfortable with that, you realize it's not just about porn. It's about the absence of conversation. We've sanitized parenting to the point where we avoid the mess. We avoid discomfort. But the kids are already in it. They're having those conversations with each other, with strangers online, with algorithms that don't have a conscience. And if you're not willing to step in with context, they'll get it from somewhere else. I promise you. This isn't about demonizing tech or blaming parents. It's about accepting that the emotional environment you build around your kids, it matters. And the things you mirror back to them, what you praise, what you dismiss, what you pretend not to see, those are all shaping who they believe they are or who they think they'll never be. If you're not having conversations about sex, power, rage, and identity, someone already is. Probably anonymously, probably without empathy, and probably in a way that turns your kid into someone you don't recognize 5 years from now. So yeah, parenting today is harder, but parenting that silence, or pretending that silence rather, is safety, that's not just naive, it's dangerous, it's ignorant. Let's not wait to have the hard talks after everything's already gone sideways. Tell me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. I would love to hear them. If you're not on YouTube already, please check us out. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and you will find us there. If you're listening on the podcast platforms, please hit subscribe there and also check us out on YouTube. We got unique stuff on both channels and also the same stuff too. So you can listen to the show if you can't watch it or watch the show if you want to not listen to it. Do a little bit of both. It's a buffet of true crime content for you to consume every single day. We put a lot of work into it and we put a lot out there. So please do hit subscribe wherever you're downloading or listening to us. I do greatly appreciate that. All right. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.